Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Tonight's show, our special guest is Barbara Joy Hansen, and she also goes by Bobby. She's from Milford, Massachusetts, a child abuse survivor and violence prevention expert. Her book, Listen to the Cry of the Child, is where she shares her journey. She and her husband work in the prisons, homeless shelters, domestic violent conferences, and she facilitates a survivor support group called Beauty Out of Ashes. Barbara has a lot of information and experience to offer, and there's no doubt I've hosted the show many, many times with Barbara Joy Hansen here, and I'm looking forward to the show. Before we get started with the show, I'd like to tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, it is tax-deductible as we are a nonprofit agency. We have a single purpose here at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. We educate the public, especially as related to helping society get over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So here at NASCA, we ask you to be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. We're fighting for kids and we're serving adult survivors. If you'd like to call in the show tonight, it is an open mic show. It is an open mic show for the folks who are streaming in, and we know we have several folks. If you'd like to call in and participate in the show, we'd love to have you. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we do have a couple of people who have called in, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And I know Bobby Joy will be as well. And I'm going to start first with Cherie. Cherie, I forgot when I had you on the phone, I forgot to ask you what area you're calling from.
The Memphis area.
The Memphis area, Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. Is this your first time calling in, or is it just the first time that I've had the pleasure of being on the show with you?
Actually, it's the second time I've called in. This is the first time you've spoke to me on the show. Barbara Hansen recommended me to call in, so I did.
Awesome. Well, we'll get the show started in just a few minutes, and I'm just thankful that you're here, and I really appreciate you calling in. It's going to be a fabulous show. It's a lot of information. I'm not sure where you are in your healing process, but we all started somewhere, every single one of us. So welcome to the show.
Right. Thank you so much. My healing process has gone pretty good. I was bullied really bad in school, and in my book, bullying is abuse. So,
okay,
I think it's just another form of child abuse.
Yes, I was bullied in the fourth grade. I know how it feels. I remember coming home crying. I remember being picked on by all the kids at school. You know, here I was dealing with, you know, being abused by my grandma, and then when I got to a point where I was going to school, then the kids picked on me. So it's tough.
Right.
So I appreciate you you sharing with us. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. And you know, I'm sorry that you had to go through the abuse and the bullying. And anyway, I just wanted to let you know that my you're in my thoughts and prayers. And
well, I appreciate that. You know, like I said, we all started somewhere, and it's just my story. And you know, God has He has made a different path for me than I may have taken if I had a normal childhood, and that's okay. If I had a normal childhood, I probably wouldn't be on this call tonight. So I'm grateful for I'm grateful for my life.
Right, I'm the same way. I've pretty much healed, you know, from the bullying. I even had a few teachers bully me and humiliate me in front of the classmates. But I think that if I had not gone through that, I wouldn't be an anti-bullying activist today. I wouldn't have become a published author of four books, all bully-themed. And, you know, I wouldn't be blogging about bullying and, you know, using my blog to reach out and help others who are going through it today. So in that, it's just so rewarding, you know, to be able to take your pain, turn it around to help other people who are going through the same thing. It's very rewarding. And it's what really makes me happy and fulfills me. So, you know, I'm in many ways, I'm thankful for that.
Absolutely. That made us who we are today. Well, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Next, I'm going to go to my co-host trailer, which is Laurie Calgary. I'm not Laurie. You're going to have to pronounce your name, but I know Laurie's calling in from Canada. Good evening, Laurie. How are you? You better pronounce your name,
Jamie,
so I don't chop it up too badly.
Yeah, that's the city I live in, Calgary. And
that's
people say Calgary.
Okay.
But
Calgary.
It's one of the bigger cities. It's the second biggest city in Alberta in Canada. And we're right above Montana. That's where we're at. I'm sitting right above Montana. So
okay.
That's where I'm at,
okay,
in the Rockies
cool.
there. Yeah. And my last name's Smith, so that's easy.
awesome.
But I'm glad to be here, Tammy. This is awesome. I feel very happy to be able to be part of this panel tonight.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, and I'm glad to have you co-hosting as well. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate
Thanks,
this group
Tammy.
I've got going on. So hopefully I don't sound too bad on the phone.
No, you sound fine. Yeah.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Terrible cough.
Thank you. Yeah, I do have a cough. It's not COVID-19. That
no.
I know.
That's good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being here, Lori. And now I am going to open Barb Joy Hansen's mic. Like I said, Barb is calling in from Milford, Massachusetts, and she is a survivor and a violence prevention expert. So good evening, Barb Joy. How are you?
Hi. I am so glad to be back on, Tammy, with you all. And even though I experienced deep sadness because of my many experiences as a child and preteen and adult years, I'm very, like Cherie has said, I'm a beacon of light, hope, inspiration, and encouragement for many survivors of all types of abuse. So through my very strong faith in Jesus, He has raised me out of the ashes and transformed my life to inspire and educate and encourage others and embrace their healing journey, no matter where it takes them and no matter where they are in the steps out of darkness into the light.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Well, you are the guest speaker tonight, so I am going to turn the mic over to you. We've got Cherie in Tennessee. Oh, hold on. We've got someone else who has come in. So before I do that, Barbara Joy, let me see who's calling in from area 10963. Okay. We've got area code 963 calling in. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with? Area code 763.
Yeah,
area
hi, it's Victoria Kelly. Yeah.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi.
And Victoria, what area are you calling from?
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate that. We've got a pretty healthy panel to get going. We've gone through the introduction. I'm Tammy.
Yeah.
I'm calling in from Pompano, Lighthouse Point, Florida. We have Cherie, who was calling in from Tennessee. We have Lori, who was called in from Canada. We have Victoria from the Minnesota area. And we have our guest speaker, Barbara Joy, who is calling in from Massachusetts. And Barbara is the guest speaker, so I'm going to turn the mic over to her to get the show started and start us with a theme or what's on her mind. So, Barbara Joy, the mic is yours.
Okay, thank you. I really have been thinking about the show tonight. It's Domestic Violence Month in October, and as you know, domestic violence covers a whole realm of issues. But what I'd like to concentrate is a completely different subject because of what happened on a day that I was taking my husband's shirts to the cleaners last week when I saw a man holding up his sign by the busy highway. As cars were coming off the highway, he was holding homeless. And as I drove by, and I want you to think about a few things as I talk and as I speak, you can address some of these things afterwards. But as I drove by him, my heart tugged because I've worked with the homeless. I've been in drug shelters and I've, worked with prisoners, and my heart tugged as I wondered, okay, now, what can I do? What could I give him? It was kind of strange because before I went on the highway, I had my devotions, as I sometimes do with my husband, but this particular day, he was gone. He was out of the house. And so I read about a story about a homeless man that walked into the train with his cup of loose change and a speech that began like many others, "Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for the interruption. I know what's coming next." This is a devotional written by Karen Valentin. And she said, "My oldest son, Brandon, nudged me with his elbow. That's his signal for me to look through my bag for a dollar. I make sure to keep a few signals handy to avoid the heartbroken look on his face. Sure enough, I find one. Brandon smiles as he hands the bill to the man. Another woman extends a plastic bag and tells him there's a sandwich inside. Suddenly, Brandon remembers the tangerines I packed for him. Mommy, he says in a frantic tone, hurry up and open up your bag. But it's too late. The homeless man has left the subway car. It's okay, Brandon, I tell him as I see his disappointment. He has a sandwich he's going to eat to get today. Brandon shrugs his shoulders. I know, but it would have gone nicely with his tangerine. This comment grabs at my heart in a new way. I already know my son's burden for the homeless. I've seen him cry over the suffering he's seen. I've heard his dreams of buying mansions where the homeless can live and be cared for. But the tangerine goes beyond wanting to help a hungry man eat. I see that Brandon wants this man to enjoy his meal in a city where the staggering presence of homelessness can desensitize. He teaches me that compassion goes beyond handing a dollar to someone I can barely look in the eye. With a simple piece of fruit, my son reminds me to look deeper and see their humanity. So as I read that devotional, I'm going on the highway and delivering the shirts to the cleaners, and I see a homeless man holding a sign up, and I thought, wow, that's strange. God put one right in front of me. I don't think it was a coincidence. So as I was coming back from the cleaners, I was hoping he was still there as I drove my car nearby to a Burger King and locked the car up with my purse in it, and I got out a Starbucks gift card that was in our stocking at Christmas time, and I tucked a Dunkin' Donut card in as well. And as I walked up to the man and walked right in front of him, people driving by, as I said to him, "So, sir, you're hard on your luck?" And he answered me saying, "No, I have a job at the dollar store over there, but I don't get paid for 2 weeks." So pulling the gift cards from my pocket, I told him, "I have something for you." But his answer took me by surprise, and it probably will you too. Actually, it shocked me as he said, "I stay at the hotel next to Burger King, lady." And he gave the cards back to me, saying, "I don't want them here, and I don't like Dunkin' Donuts." Well, homeless? I didn't say a thing as I took them out of his hand, and I was feeling angry at his deception. I got back in my car and drove home. So that probably will take you by surprise as well. But there's a lot of homeless in society, in your city and in mine. And what are you doing to help the outcast, the underdog, and the lepers of society, the homeless? Do you pass them by without even a smile? Are you unaware that beneath their faces and their empty eyes is a very hurting, lonely, discouraged soul that needs a touch from Jesus or Yeshua?
That's right.
The lost, the hopeless,
that's right.
Those who are accountable for America's
okay.
homeless. According to the U.S. Department of Housing 2018 report, 553,000 people in the United States are homeless, or 17% of America's population on a given night are homeless. They come from all
right.
walks of life, different circumstances. You've seen them as you walk by, and they ask for money, maybe outside a grocery store, or they hold up their sign at an intersection like I saw. But do we walk and look the other way? As if they don't exist? They're somebody's child, somebody's brother, somebody's dad or uncle. 26%
right.
have come from mental illness, and 35% are suffering from addictions, or maybe they've gone to prison and they've come out. When was the last time you bought them a meal at McDonald's or a cup of coffee at Starbucks?
Right. And, you know, you were talking about how the guy rebuffed you, Miss Barbara.
Yes.
I think a lot of that was out of embarrassment, shame, because when we're homeless and we're alone and we don't have a dime, you know, that's humiliating. It can be embarrassing. And I think maybe he just felt like a loser. He felt like a charity case, and maybe he did that out of shame.
Well, you know what he told me, and I forgot. He said, I don't get paid for 2 weeks. That's why I'm standing here. So I'm thinking, okay, he has a job. He has a place to lay down at night. The hotel has breakfast in the morning, and he's out here panhandling, saying he's homeless. That's the part that grabbed me and thought, you know what?
Right.
I'm not sure, you know?
Right. Well, I tell you, I'd like to weigh in on this because, you know, I've had the same conversation repeatedly. I've had a couple of them on Facebook, you know, some commentary
mm-hmm.
on Facebook, and I've had it, you know, in other places as well. They are panhandlers out there, and I watched a video the other day where some lady was panhandling. She went and got into a very, very nice brand new vehicle. But, you know, that can be, you know, when we see that kind of deception, it can make us a little cynical. But, right, we can't, and I'll tell you a little story of, I mean, this really, really strikes a chord with me.
I'll tell you a little story. When I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, I worked at a hotel, and we knew that there were some homeless folks who had a camp back behind the Walmart. Well, our hotel, I-20, the ramp dead-ended right in front of our hotel, and there would be homeless people out there panhandling for money. And it didn't do the hotel any favors. It was horrible. People, you know, well, we're not going to go there. I mean, the homeless is there. There they are panhandling. I mean, this is in Columbia, South Carolina. So we called Popo and get them to chase them off. You know, we'd have to do that a couple times a week. And, you know, I was pretty plugged into South Carolina, very, very plugged in. I knew the governor. Not only did I know the governor knew me. You know, I was on every board or whatever. And I remember going up to the next ramp, and there was a lady who was she was panhandling for some money, and she had this look on her face. And I remember rolling down the window and saying something pretty mean to her. And I remember her yelling back, you know, how could you be so heartless? And I was pretty smug about it. This is about, it's been a while now. And let me tell you something. After that, it wasn't very long after that I lost my job. I couldn't get another job. I ended up losing my apartment. I ended up having to move back home to my mom. It took me 9 months to get another job, almost. And, you know, and I was completely helpless. But God taught me one of the best lessons I've ever learned in my life in that. And it wasn't until I realized why my life was going so badly, when I remember that lady's face and I remember her screaming. And, you know, she probably was in dire straits. And God taught me, it's not for me to judge. I don't care. If I give money to somebody or if I insult somebody, so be it. Slough it off and go back, because the next time you come across somebody, they could be in dire straits. So we don't know who's panhandling, who's not. You know, who's working the system or who is really, really down on their luck. So I learned not to judge, you know. And then, you know, once I remember that face, I remember that God opened up. And I'm a woman of faith. You know, I'm not I'm not talking for NASCA. NASCA is a 501c3. We're very neutral. But personally, I'm a woman of faith. And it wasn't until that time in my life where I remembered that lady's face and, you know, asked for God's forgiveness. Did my life start turning around? I ended up getting a job. I ended up, my life started to prosper. And then when I moved to, went to Shreveport, went to a couple of places, went to Savannah, worked at very, very, very luxury hotels. And then I found myself in Miami, Florida, South Beach. Beautiful, beautiful boutique hotel. Doing very well. Stay in the hotel. Everything paid for. And walking the streets of South Beach is pretty exciting. But I got to know a lot of the homeless, you know, and I got to know them by name, and they got to know me by name. And I used to go buy granola bars, and I would pass out granola bars. Some of them, you know, some of them appreciated it, some of them didn't. But there was a lady there, her name was Donna. I'll never forget this. I befriended her. I used to bring her, you know, she was a woman. You know, she's a black woman. And sweet as she could be, I got to know her, you know, and surprisingly, South Beach is very hot, but she wore a long sleeve, because I got to the point to where I bought her some bras. I asked her, I said, baby, what do you need? And she told me, she said, I need bras and panties. I can't tell you the last time I had a bra. So I literally went to the store, not that I want pats on the back for it, but, you know, I went and bought her some girl stuff. I got a packet. I gave her some bras, some underwear, some makeup, you know, and she wanted Noxzema of all things. So I went and got her some Noxzema, and, you know, and like I said, I was, you know, a lot of them would, you know, they'd give me granola bars. Whoa, you got some money? You know, no, you know, and then they got to know me by name, and I would give them granola bars. So the lesson that I learned on that is, it's not for me to judge. And if I insult somebody, that's okay. The next person may be grateful. So that's my take on it. So I want to open it up to the other folks to comment. That's all.
Yeah, anybody? Well, I mean, homelessness, it's a problem. This is Lori in Canada. And I'm from New Mexico originally, so I'm from the States. So I lived there for 30 years, and I know the problems down there too. But now I've been up here 25 years, and I know the problems up here too. So it's like homelessness is a huge issue. And in my own family, two of my brothers were homeless, and they were drug addicts, and they were on the streets in Calgary where I live. So they were up here in Canada. I was down in the States, so I didn't see them for years. But we knew their predicaments. They were just such heavy drug users, and they grew up abused in the same house I did. They just couldn't cope. So when I see homeless people, I look at them through the eyes of compassion, mainly, because I know that's somebody's brother, that's somebody's son, that's somebody's daughter,
right?
And somebody's sister. It just to me, it's like they're not invisible to me. I know I live right downtown in where I live in Calgary, and there's homeless people all over the place all the time. And every time I see them, I wish there was something I could do to really help them. You know what I mean? I can't really, even if I don't have any money right now to give to anybody, but if I did, I certainly would pass them a few bucks. But when I could, back in the old days when I had a job and actually had money, I would try to help people, especially if I saw that they were genuinely looking for, even just a cup of coffee, or something like that, and not going to go out and blow it on booze or alcohol or drugs or whatever. But even then, you don't know. It's tough. But I know.
No,
I,
you don't.
Yeah. And my brothers, when they were in their 30s, they both committed suicide. They just couldn't do it. They could not cope. And so it's unfortunate. And nobody could reach them. They actually were in and out of treatment, and out of facilities. They had lots of help. But they were abused just like I was, and it's they just did not deal with their they didn't look for help. It's like they didn't look for that hope, So it breaks my heart to see these homeless people out here. I know that I could be homeless at any time, and I just keep them in my prayers, But I know I don't look down on them like some people might. That might be because of having people in my own family be homeless. People would run them down, even in my own family would say horrible things about them. And I was like, cut them some slack. Like they've been through the mill and they can't cope, So it's a sad situation. Yeah. It's very, very sad.
Yeah. Well, is my mic on?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Barb, Bobby Joy. My book promoter and I have been all over the world and spoken to in prison conferences and domestic violence conferences. And we've been out in San Diego where there's a lot of homeless. It's, of course, it's warmer out there. But what we did was because you get free water in these big, beautiful hotels that we were staying in, so we would freeze them half, maybe a couple of hours, and make peanut butter sandwiches or peanut butter and jelly. And we'd go down by the train tracks and give some water, cold water. Like it says in Scripture, if you give a cup of cold water in my name, there I am in the midst of them. So I have a heart of compassion as well for the homeless. And
that's
like
awesome.
Like you said, who are we to judge? We don't walk in their shoes, and maybe you have, but I was blessed to been able to be there, and they're coming up out of the train tracks, seeing us give water out, and they're like practically running towards us, and then of course one calls the next to the next, and they're all around us, and you have a wonderful opportunity then to share your story of hope with them, as I have done, and I'm so blessed to be able to, be able to do that with not only the homeless, but all these other people that I speak to, and be able to give them a cup of cold water, so to speak. And it's just an honor to, see the brokenhearted and give release to the captives and sight to the blind and set the prisoners free. We've taken in addicts. That was my drug of choice, was codependency, over a period of 8 years. That was the dark side of my story, taking in heroin and drug addicts. which I had to let go and heal the wounded child within. But this one overdosed in 2005, and he was a Christian. He knew more about God than I did in prison, and was all built up. But as soon as he got out, he'd go, like you said, Laurie, he went right to the pit of hell and right back to the drugs and alcohol, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and overdosed in 2005. But he was homeless too.
That's
and
sad.
Yeah, it was horrible to hear his story. Every time he'd get out, it was worse than the next. And I believe he'll be in heaven because he knew Jesus. I mean, like we say, who are we to judge? We don't know where their heart is at that time. And we've had
mm-hmm.
suicide
yep.
in our family as well. My husband's father took his life, and
right.
And it was such a devastation, and that was a subject we addressed, and Sherry was on the show last month when we addressed suicide.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
right.
thank you for
okay.
sharing.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Well, absolutely. Well, I want to give Sherry an opportunity, opportunity to speak as well, and Victoria. But before I do, I want to, point out that, a lot of homeless folks, they survive trauma. There's a lot of child
oh, yeah.
abuse survivors mm-hmm. who have become homeless. And,
that's right.
we had a person, she was actually one of our trailers, Laura. She passed away not too long ago. And
yes.
I'll just say her first name, Laura, bless her heart. She was on the show a good bit, but she would talk about, her days of being homeless, and she attributed that to a lot of her abuse. And so I want to remember Laura and remember that, we all are down on our luck a lot of times. So, you don't know what somebody's going through. And if I inadvertently, help somebody who is working the system, so what? You know what? I'll get through it. I'm not doing it for, I'm doing it, for different reasons. I've gotten past and I've gotten burned by, assuming
mm-hmm.
somebody was, working the system when they were probably more than likely in dire straits. And, I paid, God taught me one of the biggest lessons of my life. So anyway, let's go to Victoria, and then we'll go to Cherie. Victoria, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, can you hear me okay? Homelessness. I'm actually in a situation where if it wasn't for COVID, I'd be homeless. Because my lease is coming up, and I had a service animal, and they've been giving me grief. I had to get an attorney through the Disability Law Center to even stay here. And the director said, if I knew you were going to bring a dog in here, I'd never let you come in the first place. Assisted living facility. And 11 years ago, I was in Houston, Texas, homeless. And I have a video. If anybody wants to message me, I'll send it to you. It's really sad that YouTube ended up putting on YouTube. And
wow.
Anyway, yeah, it was pretty bad. And ended up going to a home for people that have mental illness, and ended up going to this place, and one of the staff members, long story, but one of the staff members beat me over the head with a broom handle or a mop handle, and I ended up in a psych ward. She took pity on me. I didn't even know who I was for 5 days because obviously they didn't tell them I had a head injury.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they caused it. Yeah, and thank God the psychiatrist took pity on me. And asked me, if I had family. I said, yeah, but I haven't been in contact with them for 5 years. And she said, does anybody know how to get a hold of me? I said, well, my mom, but she's the reason why I'm out here, because my mom went ballistic on me, and I had to leave, And so anyway, she said, well, I'll call your mom. So she did, and got my daughter's number. My daughter talked to her 5 days, and I kept saying, I'm not coming back. I don't want to be a burden on you. And I finally got on the phone with my daughter. My daughter says, Mom, it's more of a burden having you there in Houston or in Minnesota. And she said, Houston has the worst mental health services and Minnesota has the best. She said, if you were here, I could help you, And I was like, no. But then the final thing was a hook was, she said, me and Rick, who is my son, she said, you could die out there any day, Mom, and Rick and I wouldn't even know it. And see, I had sent them the video, and I didn't know I looked as bad or what I was saying was as bad as it was. But I do want to tell you a positive story. I'm in AA. I have just got 34 years of sobriety.
Congratulations.
And, well, now I'm facing my 20th time of homelessness, okay? But 11 years ago, I was still sober, you know. People couldn't believe, you know, I was going to meetings. People couldn't believe that, you know, that I stayed sober out there. I even had a lot of women come up to me and say, how do you do it, you know? So I was able to give them, you know, my testimony on that, you know. So anyway, we go to an Al-Anon club out here for AA and Al-Anon. And my granddaughter, who was 9 at the time last year, she's 10 now, we were going to have karaoke over there. And her dad and mom split up, so her dad had her. And he's writing this on Facebook. He said, so, you know, she's leaving the house and she grabs a hula hoop in a cardboard box. And he's like, well, who knows, you know, because she's always doing something. And then he writes, I don't know how she got the microphone. But apparently she got up there and said, okay, well, I'm not singing. I'm going to do a hula hoop routine and I'm putting this box down here and I'm collecting money to feed the homeless.
Oh.
So she did her hula hoop routine. Yep, she did her hula hoop routine, and she raised $37. She wakes up the next morning and tells her dad, okay, first thing she wakes up, okay, let's go feed the homeless.
Yeah.
And her dad's like, Lily, honey, I got things to do. You know, I have things to do. And he said, she pouted, she whined, she begged, you know, and finally he got mad at her and said, Lily, I got things to do. He said, really proud of you for doing that and that you want to follow through, but I got things to do. And then he went to do something, and then he thought to himself, well, I'm saying it, but I'm not really doing. You know what I mean? And so he called his friends, and they still don't know what they're going to do with this $37. So they went out to the pizza place and got $5 pizzas. And they went over to what we call Tent City over South Minneapolis. And she went over there and passed out slices of pizza to everybody.
Oh,
so he
goodness.
Started a fundraiser on Facebook called Lily's Loving Heart. And got donations, and then somebody gave her one of those little carts that you carry behind a bike, you know? And so she was putting all the pizza in there. And then I started making enough money to go out and grill out there and bring pop and drinks and everything, you know? And so I wrote on Facebook, I wrote, you know, the government and all these agencies and places, they spend all this money and pay all these people to count the homeless and, you know, give statistics and everything else. All you really need is a hula hoop and a cardboard box.
Oh, that's beautiful. How old is she?
Yeah.
How old is she?
She was 9 then. She's 10 now.
9 years. Oh, what a blessing.
9 years old. Yep. Yep.
She's got such compassion.
Well, that's, you know, when he called a fundraiser Lily's Loving Heart, you know. And then I said, oh, honey, I hear you got a lot of people helping you out. Oh, yeah, Grandma, I got a crew.
But that's awesome.
The year before that, she was raising money for the American Heart Association. And she gets on, you know, she makes little videos. She gets on Facebook, makes little videos. Says, hi, everybody.
Aww.
She says, I'm raising money for the American Heart Association. Oh, thank you, everybody who already helped me.
Isn't
she said, she pulls out her little pamphlet and says, see this little girl right here? She had 3 holes in her heart. Now, she's 8. 3 holes in her heart. And then she got surgery. And now she's a heart hero. So if you give me some money, I'll give it to my teacher. And my teacher will give it to the people that need operations on her heart. Thank you. It was so adorable.
What a special
gift. 5 days later, her dad posted her eye had went crooked up in her head. And her dad brought her over to Children's Hospital here in Minneapolis and found out she had 3 nodules on her brainstem.
Oh.
And so she's going all through all this testing and medication and everything else. And, you know, my daughter tells her everything that's going on, you know. So this kid knows everything that's going on, and man, you know, I'm like worried as all myself. So like the 3rd day, she kind of came to, and she was just kind of groggy, you know. And she goes, "Mommy, will you do me a favor?" And my daughter goes, "Sure, honey. Anything? What? Will you check on my fundraiser?"
Oh.
And I mean, oh my God. You know, I mean,
oh wow.
I just got to tell you. all of a sudden it hit me, man, all my aches and pains and everything else that I've been going through at that time, I went, oh, my God, if my granddaughter could put all that aside and go, how's my fundraiser? What am I going to do today, you know?
Yes, amen.
And what opportunity am I going to have today to help another human being?
Right.
Because
well,
every morning I wake up and I say, thank you for the day, and help me to help another human being. And my higher power puts people in my life that can help.
That's for sure. I've seen you on Facebook, Victoria. I've seen your fluffy white dog.
Oh, yeah, Marshmallow. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wrote on your Facebook page.
Yeah. Yep.
Good for you. I'm so glad you got to keep the dog.
Yeah. Well, it took getting an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. That was very inspirational.
So think of that 9-year-old little girl who had a hula hoop in a cardboard box because she wanted to feed the homeless. There's some places in Minneapolis, like Burger King, McDonald's. If
mm-hmm.
they see you talking to a homeless person, you go in to get two meals, say.
Mm-hmm.
They go, are you
mm-hmm.
feeding that person out there? And if you say yes, by any chance, they won't let you buy even them a cup of coffee.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yep.
Well, thank you for
yep.
sharing that. I want to give Cherie a chance to chime in.
Sure.
So thank you, Victoria. Cherie, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it reminds me of, I can't exactly remember where the scripture is, but it reminds me of somewhere in the Bible where it says to be childlike. And when she was telling the story of her granddaughter and the fundraiser, you know, it reminded me of that scripture that we should be childlike.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, absolutely. What about whatever
children,
you did for one of the least of these you did for me? That's in Matthew 25:40.
Right.
Well, thank you
and,
for sharing that.
So, Cherie, have you given to the homeless? Or I don't give money because I don't know where it's going to go, but have you given a sandwich or, you know, anything like that?
I have. On a few occasions I came across, there was this guy in McDonald's. Well, actually, he was outside of McDonald's. And he had a sign, you know, in our town, McDonald's and Walmart and the Murphy Station is all in the same vicinity. And he was sitting on the side of the road with a cardboard box saying, like, we'll work for food.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were passing him by. So, you know, I was going to McDonald's anyway, so I just bought him some breakfast at McDonald's, sausage, cheese, biscuit, and a Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, because, I mean, the cardboard box says he was hungry. Well, I'm hungry. I'll work for food.
Right.
And, you know, I felt much better once I gave him the food. And
sure.
I think he was mute because he pointed to me, and then he pointed up.
Aw.
And I was like, you're very welcome. Nice to bless you. But I think he was mute because he didn't say anything. Maybe he was deaf, but he pointed to me and then he pointed up. So.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's beautiful.
It is. And that's been some years ago, but it's something I never
mm-hmm.
forgot.
You feel so good in your heart when you do something like that for somebody.
You do because you would want somebody to do the same for you if you were in that predicament.
Mm, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, before I turn it back over to you, Barbara Joy, let me give Lori an opportunity to chime in. Lori, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I just think what Victoria was talking about is just wonderful with her granddaughter, and I'm happy that you're got to keep your dog, and I hope it all goes well for you. I saw your Facebook post too, and I was like heartbroken. You know, so many of us, I think, you know, because we're survivors, of abuse and bullying here on the panel here. We understand what it's like to be hurting, to be the cast out, you know, to be the, the people looked over, the people that, you know, that understand pain and loneliness and, you know, being sort of separated out, you know. Many people don't have families. You know, there's lots of people that don't have families. Even if they do have a family, they can't, they can't connect with them. So in many ways, I think that we can relate to that situation a little better than maybe some other people. And yeah, it's just with looking on people with how I want to be treated. You know, I agree with all of you. I think that's important to remember that it could be me out there, and to treat them the way that I would want to be treated, with respect and with dignity. And, you know, even if I don't have money to hand them at the time, I can pray for them, you know, and I can stop and give them a kind word and say hello, you know, I see you. And, you know, just to let them know that they're not alone, you know.
Right. But the sad part about it is most people don't think they'll ever be in that predicament someday. And I know it's certainly the case in my town, because many times I've seen, you know, starving people, you know, on the side of that same parking lot with a board, a cardboard sign in their hand saying, "Hungry, we'll eat." And people walk by them and they just talk all kinds of trash to them. They talk about them behind their back. They point fingers. They laugh. And these are supposed to be small town people. And, you know, small towns are, they have this stereotype that everybody's friendly and everybody's man's good word and a handshake. And you know, you could trust that. No, not true. And in fact, they're, small towns are worse than big cities. You know, really, because at least big cities, people mind their own business. You know, if you're down on your luck, you know, people don't care. They don't talk about you. They just don't care. So, you know, they mind their own business. But you're in a small town and you're down on your luck, people will make fun of you. They'll make it their business to know, and then they'll go talk trash about you behind your back. And it's just, in a small town where everybody knows everybody, you know, it's if you ever get down on your luck, you're going to have a lot of enemies come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's
okay,
sad.
Well, I'm sorry, who's speaking?
Oh, it's Lori.
Oh, go ahead, Lori, go ahead. Yeah, you guys might
want to tell
who's speaking, that way we can tell. But Lori, go ahead,
yeah,
and we'll
Trudy,
go back
sorry.
To Barbara Joy. Go
yeah.
ahead. No,
I just wanted to say I totally relate to that. I didn't grow up in a very small town, Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's where I grew up. But it was kind of a medium-sized city. But I grew up in a neighborhood where that attitude was going on, because I grew up in a sort of, I grew up kind of amongst people that weren't really, they were sort of middle class, like lower middle class. But my family was poor. so we were kind of looked down on and you know, kind of, you know, trash talking. That's how I grew up. And so I can see it's, you know, people in certain areas will quite often do that, even within segregated neighborhoods, you know.
Right.
Instead of lifting you up and trying to give you a hand, they just run you down, right? It's like, that's sad. Really, it is.
Yeah, and it's like people enjoy watching you fall. That's the bad part about it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're talking over each other.
No.
So
I'm
first
sorry.
Of all, if you guys would, before you start speaking, say your name. That way we know who's talking.
Okay.
I'm starting to recognize the voice. Who was talking? And I want us all to have an opportunity, and then we'll go back to Barbara Joy. I think Lori, will you finish speaking?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. And then I think it may be Victoria. Victoria, were you trying to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just was going to say quick that when you were comparing the, you know, talking about people to being ignored, it just related to child abuse to me so much that
mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure whether the being talked about and teased and bullied and all that was worse than the totally being ignored. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Mm-hmm.
This is Cherie, and I have to agree with that.
Go ahead, Cherie.
Because I would rather be ignored rather than be bullied. And I know that sounds strange to a lot of people, but at least if they're ignoring you, they're leaving you alone. If they're bullying you, they're not leaving you alone. They're under your butt. They're in your face. I mean, they're not giving you a moment's peace. So at least when the people are ignoring you, they're giving you some peace. And, you know, that's
right.
That's the point I wanted to make.
Right. Well, you know, bullying, you know, a lot of times, especially, and I'll take it back to child abuse, because that's you know, what we're discuss on this show. You know, a lot of times us survivors, you know, we were bullied by our abusers. You know,
right.
I was bullied by my grandmother. You know, you're dumb, you're stupid, you're worthless. This world would be better off if you'd never been born. You know, that's bullying. You know, a lot of times, you know, they'll turn the siblings on each other. You know, I've heard those stories. That forcing the siblings to bully, you know, do the bullying for them.
Right.
Bullying hurts, and it's really hard sometimes to stand up for yourself. And, you know, we've got to be able to learn how. If not, we'll be bullied for the rest of our lives. So at some
right.
point, you know, we've got to be strong. I mean, I see people, you know, even at my little local place that I hang out. I mean, there's a couple of bullies there. You know, I'll tell you a story. We're sitting there the other night, and there's this guy. His name is Stefan. I'll just leave it at that. His name is Stefan. He's a little weird. That's okay. I like weird people. I think they're interesting. And everybody kept putting him down, and they kept talking about him. And you know what I did? I got up, and I walked over there, and I struck a conversation with him. And he's a cool cat. Yeah, he's Sagittarius like I am. You know, we have a lot in common. And now everybody else started accepting him. You know, not that I have anything, but, you know, people gave him a chance, and they started talking to him, and he's a real cool dude. And he's, you know, now he doesn't sit over there in the corner by himself. He sits with the rest of us, and he cuts up with the rest of us. But it was really easy for those people to make themselves feel better. And to me, it's low self-esteem. You know, it made those people feel better about themselves that they could point over there at that weird guy over there. For whatever reason, you know,
right.
it gave them a feeling of superiority. You know,
yep.
a lot of times, you know, narcissists, you know, that's what they're wanting. They want to
mm-hmm.
feel superior to other people. And,
that's
you know,
right.
when you dig down on it, you know, we won't get into the terms of narcissism, but a lot of times it's because of their own low self-esteem. So
that's
with
right.
that said, I want to go back. I want to give the microphone back to Barbara Joy because she is our guest host, and I want to give her an opportunity. It is 8:53. We've got about, 36 minutes left. So let's go back to Barbara Joy so she can, you know, steer where she wants to go. Barbara Joy?
Okay. As you all were talking, I thought back to my childhood with my brother, who's 2 years older than me, and he was my protector. I followed him everywhere, and he's still my best friend. He's a professor in Pittsburgh, and he works with social work and teaches workshops on addictions, etc. But when he was younger, he was I don't think he was passive. He just didn't stand up to bullies. And my best friend was molested. She was a pastor's kid, and she's the only one I told. Her name is Judy, and I wrote a chapter about her in my book because she was so important to me, and we still communicate with one another. And so Judy had a brother named Peter, and Peter was a bully. He was horrible. He would make fun of my brother. He would come over to the house and yell at him, and my brother wouldn't go out of the house very much because Peter would, you know, bully. I mean, he was one of the worst. So my dad, being a pastor, I was shocked at what my father told my brother to do. because it just went on day after day after day after day. My brother, you know, he didn't know what to do. My father just said, you know what, when he comes over to the house, to our house, go out there and just not hurt him, but give him a punch. Well, I couldn't believe my father, being a clergy, would tell my brother that. But my brother did it, and he never got touched, and he never got bullied again. So like you just said, Tammy, it just takes one person to change the whole flock and, you know, make everybody else look at us differently and treat that one that is treated bullying, that is bullied or looked down on, or the one that's the underdog and the outcast, and you took an interest in that one, and then look at what happened to the rest of them. And I want to go back to, I've had wonderful opportunities to fundraise at my local Walmart, not only for NASCA, but for my work in the Philippines. I'm a humanitarian aid worker, and I've spoken all over the world. And it's, some of the money is going to go to NASCA, and some of it's going to go for the orphanage in the Philippines, the father's house. And these kids have been trafficked and come from alcoholic homes. And we were there for 2 months, and we had a wonderful opportunity to speak almost every single day in the villages and the jungles and the mountains and all over the Philippines, and 23 churches. I preached in jails, and Muslim women danced for us in the women's jail. And it was just an honor to be there. But I wanted to say, at Walmart, this last Saturday I was there for the whole day fundraising. And I have a card table, and I have signs in the front that say NASCA and domestic violence abuse. So when people come from to the parking lot towards me, they can read the sign first before they come up to the table. And I have my books there. And little kids open up their wallet and put their change in my domestic violence can. And their mother might not even be there with them. She's standing, you know, to the side. And I'm just so thrilled that a little child is so touched. And it's neat, because as the mothers push their babies away from me in their cart or in their stroller, I've noticed in the past few times I've been at Walmart, and they have me come about every month, the little children look at me and they wave at me, and their moms are oblivious. They're, you know, they're pushing their babies back to the car, and the baby keeps looking at me. Why do you suppose that is, that children connect to me? Is it because I need that, or they just love people, or they love an adult that maybe has gone through something like that? I just thought it was so neat. Almost every child looks at me, and they're tiny little ones, like a year old, 2 years old, and then, you know, some of them come up and put a dollar in the bucket or whatever. But I was wondering about that with the children. Why do children keep staring at me and looking at me as their mother's pushing them away? Do you suppose you have an answer?
I think I can, Miss Barbara. This is Cherie, by the way. I think children automatically sense a goodness in somebody. Mm-hmm. And then as they get older, they become socialized to reject people based on superficial things. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think kids, even babies, you know, they're born with this ability to sense goodness in people and understand that children and babies are not judgmental. But as we get older, we're conditioned by others, hey, don't have anything to do with the weird guy over here. Oh, don't go near the homeless person. He might hurt you. And so they're conditioned, you know, to think that homeless people are bad, they're crazy, whatever. And they grow up, you know, with those beliefs.
That's right. But I just thought it was so precious. But then, on the other hand, at least twice, maybe three times, as I fundraised there for the entire day, I've had grown men go over to their car, and I can hear them yelling at, screaming at their significant other. And I heard one man say, "What did she say to you?" in a very loud voice. And I mean, I wasn't anywhere near him, and I could hear his voice. And the person that was standing in front of me, I said, "That woman is going to go home to an abuser." And it's so sad. And then this last Saturday, I came out of Walmart with my mask on, because you have to wear it in there. And it was warm, and I wanted a drink, and I took it off and took a drink. And another man came right after me, and he's like, "Get your mask on, lady." And I said, I'm a survivor of violence, and I do not appreciate the way you just talked to me. I'm taking a drink of water," as he walked away and he was screaming at me. So you get the contrast, the little children that are so innocent and Christ-like and so sweet, and look at me with that childlike innocence, Cherie, and I agree with you. And then you've got these grown men that are an abuser that, you know, shouts. And usually I say, "God bless you," as they walk away.
Right. And another thing, I think the reason why those grown men may see you as a threat because they have the devil in them. And,
yep,
you know, the devil sees Christ in somebody. Oh,
that's right. Demons. Yep, demons.
Right.
Demons recognize Jesus. They, you know, they do. And when I welcome the drug dealers in our house, we welcome the demons in our house as well. So my husband and I have been through deliverance and anointing the doorposts in our home after they've left, and understand a whole lot more than most people do about that world.
Right.
It's a very dark world.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, well, that was an interesting. Victoria has dropped off, so we have lost her. Okay, so we have Cherie in Tennessee, we have Lori in Canada, and then Barbara Joy in Massachusetts, and I'm calling in from Florida. So, let's see. Let me get my thoughts straight. Well, we've hit on some good subjects. We talked about the homelessness. We've talked about some fundraising. It's kind of tough sometimes when you see that abuse in the store. I've seen it with people being mean to their children.
Yeah.
One of our other hosts, Charlie. We got on the show one night and we were talking about that, because I remember my grandmother being mean to me and somebody saying something to her. And I remember when my great-grandmother called her out, they thought that they were protecting me. And then when we got home, I don't even think we got into the house, and I saw she hit me so hard I saw stars. And I didn't do anything wrong. You know, she was called out for treating me badly, and it humiliated her. And when she got home, she took it out on me. So you got to be really careful, you know, when you get in the middle of something like that, because the kid's going to get it twice as hard. Yeah, Charlie had a really good idea. He said when he sees that at the grocery store, he'll go to the aisle. He'll basically follow him, and he'll kind of go around him, and he'll knock something off the shelf. He doesn't care if it breaks, but it kind of breaks. You know, if they're yelling at that kid or talking to the kid bad, you know, he's not interrupting. He's not calling them out, you know, in fear of the kid being beaten when they get home. You know, but he has disrupted the abuse. And then it's a good segue for him to get in there. Hold on.
I appreciate your thoughts on that, because I've often wondered about the parent that's screaming at their kid, or, you know, or maybe what I see a lot in the grocery store, not a lot, but I've seen it quite a bit, is parents giving their kids fruit or things to eat. And you know that's stealing. So what do you do about that? I know, you know, the grocery stores have a whole lot of people steal things all the time. But if the parent gives it to a child that's maybe 5 or 6, that child knows, don't they, that it's stealing when they peel the banana and give it, and they haven't paid for it.
Well, a lot of times, if it's a banana and it's by weight, then there's no way to pay for it.
you know, if it's
right.
fruit
or
by
grapes
late, you
or
know,
things like that. Yeah.
Or grapes like that, yeah. And it's just, you know, you can't do a whole lot about it. I mean, you can go tattle on them. You know, you can go tell the manager, you know, that you're appointed out. I'm not sure, you know, what they can do about that. One thing
probably
that
nothing.
Is going through my mind is, you know, the fruit's not washed. So it's probably
yeah.
not the best thing to give a kid unwashed fruit. But, yeah, you do have to be careful of intervening. You know, like that lady you said that probably went home and got, you know, was abused. You're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Had you called him out on it, she probably would have gotten it twice as bad. So you got to be careful. You know, do we get involved? Do we not get involved? That's a good question because, you know, it's kind of hard to turn a blind eye to it, but then what do? You know, like I said, I thought Charlie's idea was phenomenal to, you know, knock something off the shelf as a means to intervene and talk. You know, he said he never even, you know, he'll say something to the parent, but he'll say something to the child, you know, and, you know, something kind to the child. And, you know, it kind of breaks it up. You know, if it's severe, then you go. I remember one time I was at a grocery store. I was in Savannah, Georgia, and this lady had left her kids in the van with the van cranked, and she was in the store, and not one of them could have been over 10 years old. And I was mortified. I called the police. I got the police out there. The police got there. I mean, they could have put that car in park. It was, you know, they were in and out of the vehicle. Somebody could have stole the kids. You know, I was mortified. And then the police beat her out of the store. And I, to my surprise, I was shocked. She apologized, and the police did nothing. They didn't want to be bothered with it. They basically, I was like, how can that be? She went and left these kids in a car cranked, you know, not in car seats, you know, running all over the car, could have been stolen.
Wow.
And he basically said, well, she didn't mean any harm. And he gets in, he basically just, you know, she comes out there, and he goes on his merry way. I was like, oh, my God. You know,
wow.
So, you know, when do you get involved? When do you call the police? When do you go, you know, grab the manager? And what are the consequences
right.
for that child or that lady later? My thoughts. Yours?
Here's
well,
my take on it.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize
no,
you
go
weren't
ahead.
Finished.
Is this Cherie?
My take on, yes, this is Cherie. My take on that is, anytime an abuser, anytime the abused has somebody speak out for them, basically the abuser really doesn't have the guts to go after the person who spoke out for their victim. So they basically, once they get their victim home or they
yep.
get their victim to a place to where they can hide the abuse, they escalate the abuse to basically try to reinforce the message to the victim that basically there's nothing you can do about it, that person is wrong. And the reason why bullies and abusers do that is because when someone speaks out for them, they're actually afraid that that person might have set a light bulb off in the head of the victim. And they're afraid that because that person spoke out, the victim might say, have an aha moment and say, oh, wait a minute, what this person is doing to me is wrong. And they're afraid that they might actually start asserting their power against the abuser. So the abuser has to escalate, I mean, just really... Oh shoot! Now I'm at a loss for words here. Let me find the words. The abuser has to reinforce their power to keep the abused down. Do you understand? Does that make sense?
Hello.
Oh, sure it does. This is Lori.
Go ahead, Lori.
Oh yeah, that makes total sense. And I know in my
I had a hard time explaining that, so please allow me to apologize.
Oh, no, that makes total sense to me. This is Lori in Calgary, and I had an intervention done when I was 13. I lived on some neighbors down the street, had a daughter who was about my age, 2 years older than me, but we hung around and we were pals. And my mom had beaten me up really badly one day and threw me out of the house, and my head was bleeding. It was terrible. And I laugh now, but I wasn't laughing then, let me tell you. And she cracked my skull open is what she did. And I went down, I was dizzy, and I was just a mess. And I went down to this neighbor's house to see if my friend was there, but my friend was at summer school. So her mother answered the door like I was looking to see if my friend was there, and her mother saw me and was like, oh, no, what happened, you know? And so I told her that me and my mom had a fight. That's what I said, because that's how I used to talk about it. And she's like, oh, well, let me check you out. She was a nurse, so she checked me out. She wanted to. Yeah, I mean, she wanted to intervene. They wanted to call the police, and I was 13, and at the time, my mom had been throwing me out of the house and threatening to throw me out of the house all the time, and I was the last born of seven, but that, just to make a long story short, that's the reason I didn't want an intervention done, is because I wanted my mom to look after me. I wanted her to take care of me, because she wasn't throwing the other six siblings out, just me, right? And so I was fighting to stay in the home, which is ridiculous. I should have been fighting to get out. But anyway, that's the psychological damage done. But the issue, what you were talking about, Cherie, just totally resonates with me, because they went down to talk to my mom to hear her side of the whole thing, you know what I mean, and tell her, look, you know, if right. you know, you can't do this to your daughter, like, you could have killed her, you know what I mean? We're going to call the police. The next time we see anything, we're going to call the police. And my mom was like, oh, I don't care. Call the police. I want her gone anyway. That's what she told them. Okay, so anyway, I was allowed to stay at their house for 5 days to let my mom cool off, cool down, whatever her problem was, which was just abuse. I mean, my mom was not an alcoholic or anything. She was abused herself, and she was extremely mentally ill. And so they let me stay at their place for 5 days, which was wonderful. But I should have gone to the hospital, and I should have had a police report done. You know what I mean? I should have been removed from the home. But I was the one that said, look, if I get removed from my home and I end up in foster care, I'm going to run away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to foster care. I'm not. You know what I mean? I was determined that I wanted to make the decision. So I didn't allow them to make this phone call to the police, right? So that's, you know, that's fine. And I'm actually glad that I did that, because it proved one thing to me in the end, was that my mother's love was never going to be there. And I got to find that out the hard way. But at least I knew, and I wasn't going to sit there and second guess and wonder, having been removed from the home, if my mother would have ever loved me, you know? So the issue is I relate to that, because after 5 days when I went home, when I went back home two houses up, and I walked in the door. My mom, 2 seconds later, had me up against the wall.
Kill
me.
Oh, yeah.
If I ever told anybody anything else ever again, that she was going to kill me, you know. And
my goodness.
That was her way of saying, you know, I get my power back, right?
Right.
And that's,
well, you didn't
tell.
You just went down the street to see your friend, and she saw it. So it wasn't like you went and ratted on your mother. But it's strange how we protect the perpetrator, isn't it? We don't have words to tell when we're little, and the abuse, especially sexual abuse, happens when we're so young, or bullied when we're so young. In my Beauty Out of Ashes support material, I have a chapter on the family in darkness. And perpetrators or co-perpetrators, we are unprotected, and we are incapable of getting help because we're living with them. And we have no support. We don't know who to go to. We don't know who to tell. We have no words to tell. So it goes on generational, from generations to generations, which is what happened in my family with my uncle being an abuser. Sexual abuse with my cousins, and my grandfather incested me and my cousins. And you're ignorant, you're filled with shame, you've got a lot of anger, you're not believed, you're not heard, you're screamed at like you were, Victoria. And, you know, finally as adults we're being heard, which is awesome. I mean, Lori, I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but thank you for sharing that. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. How in the heck did you heal?
Yeah, I didn't do any healing work until the age of 42, and that's 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So I've been on my healing journey 12 years, and I've come quite a long ways. And but I was a suicidal ideation. It took me to the edge, and I was throughout my life had suicidal ideation, and both of my parents were both suicidal. So it was just the norm for me. But I finally, the last time, 42 years old, sitting on the couch, I realized I had this aha moment. You know, what am I doing? Like, what? Why am I doing this? I'm really messed up. Obviously, I need help. Nobody sits around doing this, you know, that isn't messed up. I just had to accept the fact that I needed help and start reaching out. So that's what I did, and I started my healing journey at the age of 42. So it's been a long haul for sure, because I don't have the family was so dysfunctional, and now they're mainly all passed away. And there's only a couple people in the family left, and there's no communication. So I am on my own, very much so, but not really, because I've got my NASCA family and good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I'm at the age of 42, I had a spiritual
awakening.
I equate this with my healing journey because I was going to end my life. I was going to take my life that night. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, that one side of me was saying, go ahead and do it. Because I had been at this point before, you know, I had got, but I had never got that low. But that was definitely the lowest I'd ever been. But this other voice was saying, live, you know. And I started to hear that it wasn't really an audible voice. This was me just thinking about the situation. I thought, I'm going to live, you know, I'm going to live. And I knew that was God speaking to me. I knew it was.
Absolutely.
God is life. God is love. God is good. God is everything. So, yeah, that changed my life forever, completely forever. I am so thankful to be on this side of it, let me tell you. But it's been a long haul trying to heal from this and just trying to get through. But every day has been such a blessing to be on this side of it. That's I always try to, you know, tell other survivors of abuse, you know, don't suffer in silence, you know.
Reach out.
To reach out. As soon as I started reaching out, all of these hands started reaching back to me and helping, you know, pulling me up and saying, you know, we understand you. We know where you've come from, and we understand your pain. We understand your trauma. We understand your sorrow, your grief, your anger. We understand it. And so I had a lot of help from a lot of good people. Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that you're on the show, and I'm so thankful that you're living and that you're not gone and that you didn't take your life. That's so awesome.
Me too. God bless you. Thank you.
So I haven't given my website. Can I do that? So people can find me?
Sure, cool.
Absolutely.
Okay, Tammy. So I haven't put my last two podcasts. I had two podcasts in the last month, and I haven't had time to do that yet. My website is listentothecry.org, www.listentothecry.org. And if you don't have my book, Cherie does.
oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, I wrote it in a week.
It's a tearjerker.
I wrote it in a week.
I mean, it will.
Go ahead.
You won't be able to put the book down. Not only that, it will make you cry. It will make you angry for Barbara. It'll make you cry for Barbara. But the emotions that it stirs in you, you still won't be able to put it down.
Thank you. And I wasn't able to stop writing it. I wrote every single day for a whole week, nonstop. My husband took me out for dinner every night because I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go back to my desk where all my journals were, where all the pain was, where all the betrayals were, where all the anxiety and depression and PTSD and fear and living a frozen scream. And I got my journals out that I hadn't had courage to look at for about 30-some years. And I put them in my desk, and I never looked at them, and I thought, uh-oh, I'm going to die, and somebody's going to find them. But when I started writing my book, I took my husband for a walk, and I said, honey, I'm going to start writing my book tomorrow. I was a nanny for 14 years, and I quit as soon as I started writing my memoir, Listen to the Cry of the Child, which you can get from us at 508-473-1280 for $20 plus shipping and handling. Foreign, like Canada or another place, is a little bit more. We just have it weighed, but we have PayPal. And I couldn't stop writing because the pain was so raw, it was so real, it was so there. And once I started writing, I couldn't stop. So after a week, my book was almost finished, except for about three chapters or so. And my husband helped me bind it up. I had a publisher, and it was published in 3 months. So like Cherie said, she's read it. And thank you so much for, you know, getting it from us, because the only way we get money for the homeless and the domestic violence survivors and those that are outcast is through the sale of my book and my support material, Beauty Out of Ashes. And it's just such a blessing to be on the show. People have asked me why, or am I writing another book? I wanted to write Listen to the Cry of the Junkie because I got so involved with them, especially one in particular. And I have some of his letters, but that's too dark to go back there, and I wouldn't recall it if I hadn't written it down in detail. I have a lot of letters, but it's just too dark, and I don't want to go there. But I do talk about it when I'm asked or when I'm on a podcast. So I've had two podcasts from people on LinkedIn. Chatting with Betsy is going to be put on my website in the next week or so, and the Andrew Skatchkin Show that I met on LinkedIn. He's a Harvard professor and a lawyer and has written international books, and he never interviews authors, but he was intrigued by my testimony, my story, as a result of one of his friends became a preacher, a chaplain. And he works, and he was an abuse survivor as well, and he works with kids that have been trafficked in Cambodia. So he told Andrew Skatchkin about me, and he interviewed me about 2 or 3 weeks ago on his show. So I've been blessed to, you know, have these podcasts and have the doors open. And when you go out to tell your story, or when you are doing the work that God has called you to do, you don't have to kick the doors open, which I had to learn. It was a hard lesson to learn. But every day I wake up, I thank God I'm alive. I thank God I have breath to breathe. I thank God for some of the things that I've been through, even though I wouldn't want to go through them again, because you can't go back and change your past, but you can change the ending of your story, which is what I'm doing now. And each right. time a woman stands up for herself, she stands up for all women. Maya Angelou has said that quote. And I'm just honored to be able to be a co-host tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. We do have we've got about 5 minutes left, and I want to get some final thoughts from Laura and Cherie. I'm sorry we lost Victoria, but Victoria, if you're listening, thank you for being here with us and sharing your story. That was a phenomenal story that she shared. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Cherie. Cherie, do you have some final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I guess I'm not think I can't think of any right now. I guess today I'm just, it's not my day. I'm just kind of here. I haven't been feeling well.
You participated really well on the show. I mean, it's hard to believe this is only the second time you've called in, because, I mean, you were right there with us. So I think you've done a phenomenal job participating. And, you know, talking about bullying, you know, like I said, that is a common thread, a common theme with a lot of our survivors of child abuse. domestic
violence.
Right. You know, I'm a survivor of child abuse, but I'm also a survivor of domestic violence. My ex-husband
told me I
was dangerous. Nobody would ever want me. So,
right.
So that's
bullying. I think bullies, when we an abused child at home is more likely to be bullied because,
yes,
you know, bullies can sense the darkness in that child, so they take it and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think abuse attracts more abuse.
That's
and
right.
It does, you know. And a lot of times, you know, these bullies, you know, kids, and I'm a firm believer, I'm sorry, you guys probably aren't going to agree with me on this, but I don't believe in blaming suicide on someone else because they were bullied, because I was bullied and I chose not to commit suicide.
Right.
You know, that's just a personal thought of mine. But
right.
a lot of times, this you may agree with, you know, a lot of times the children who do a lot of bullying are bullied at home.
Uh-huh.
And so they're bullied at home, so then they go back, they go to school or whatever, and they bully the kids. God taught me a
right.
hard lesson on that as well. You know, I was bullied at home, and I remember trying to bully other people, you know, to make me feel like, you know, to give me that little power. It didn't turn out well.
Right.
It never turned out well, so I stopped. And then, you know, that's how God invested in me for whatever reason. God, you know, heaven knows why, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I was just, you know, smart enough, even though everybody called me dumb and stupid, maybe I was just smart enough to pick up on it. You know, that this isn't working out. You know, every time I try to bully somebody, it kind of comes back, you know, it elbows back to me. So I quit it.
Right.
And, you know, I got a different perspective. But anyway.
Well, I did the same thing. I became a bully after being
uh-huh.
bullied for so long. And
right.
you're right. You do that to snatch back some of your power and to keep from feeling so powerless. And
mm-hmm.
As much as I hate to admit it, you know, I was a pretty mean and judgmental person for a lot of years after that. I think it wasn't until I reached my mid-30s that I really started trying to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I was a mean adult for a lot of years, too. And
right.
And I'm sorry for that, you know. And I'm sorry for... the people that I'm sorry to the people that I hurt, you know.
Right.
But you've learned, Sherry.
Right.
You've learned.
Yeah,
you've
absolutely.
Learned about yourself, and that's the main thing. You've learned how to not bully others, and you've turned it around. So you've been a great person to come on the show, and I thank you so much for that.
Me too.
Thank you, Barbara. This means a lot.
Absolutely. I'm about to get the 90-second mark, and I want to get Lori on there really quick. But you've been an inspiration, Sherry, so keep
mm-hmm.
up the good work.
Mm-hmm.
Lori, you got to
–
sorry, baby. Honey, I'm about out of time, but if you got a quick comment to make, Lori. I called you baby. I didn't mean to.
That's
honey.
Okay, Tammy.
I'm Southern.
I hear you. I just want to say this has been a great show, and it seems like at the end it's all about turning it around for good. That's the message,
yes.
You know. Take all that pain and all that trauma that we went through and turn it around for good, and that's what we have to do. So I agree with all of you. And that was been a wonderful
okay.
panel. Thank you.
It's been a great show. I did just get the 90-minute mark, and I wanted to mention to you, Lori, and if we hadn't already talked about it, if you get to the point where you want to host a show, you know, on a Thursday night, you let me know, and I'll be there right with you. So if you want to, you know, just think about it. But anyway,
nice.
I just got the 60-second. Email me and let me know one way or the other. But if that's something you want to do, let me know. But
how about
Cherie?
Cherie would be great too.
Well, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
We'll get with Bill on that, but I've got to end the show. Thank you, Cherie. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Barbara Joy. Thank you, Victoria, for calling in. And I'm going to end the show by saying God bless the children of the world and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. And thank you for all the people who streamed in as well. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Another
tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was after all that you've done, I know.
Thank you.